Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery. This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
A red flag alert has been issued for the weekend due to hot, dry conditions. In other words, high fire danger. There is also a high wind watch in effect with gusts of up to 60 miles an hour expected, so use caution if you're driving in the mountain and desert areas and watch for blowing dust. As for the fire danger, if you haven't already created your defensible space, trimmed your weeds, now is the time to do so. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians. As the government shutdown continues at the federal level due to Congress failing to pass a spending bill, Congresswoman Susan Davis, who represents San Diego and East County, is co-sponsoring bipartisan legislation that would provide retroactive pay to federal workers who are furloughed. If enacted, the Federal Employees Retroactive Pay Fairness Act, H.R. 3223, will ensure that federal employees who are impacted by the government shutdown receive retroactive pay for the full duration of the federal government shutdown. Now, the San Diego region here is home to over 45,000 federal workers. That's more than any place else in California. Many of them are on furlough status now and not getting any back pay unless Congress takes action, which could certainly have a big impact on our local economy and statewide economy if this goes on for much longer. Congresswoman Davis said she's hearing from constituents who are anxious about being able to pay their bills. She said, "Federal workers are innocent victims caught in the middle of this fight. These are dedicated people who proudly serve the American people. They keep us safe, make sure our seniors get their Social Security checks, and take care of our veterans. They should not suffer," she said, "because a small number in Congress insist on shutting the government down over an ideological crusade." Last night, East County Magazine photographer Jim Pelley was listening to his scanner when he heard something unusual. Jim sent us a tape today explaining what he heard and then including a portion of it that he was able to save about an unusual wildlife sighting in East County.
Dispatcher on BLM radio came across and said, "To be advised, Border Patrol was reporting a bear near Inkopa area."
I was just trying to get that information correct. Did she say a bear?
6-7-R-4 is that affirmative. A bear, a large mammal with claws.
Dangerous, scary claws. Thank you.
Now, last February, in the very same location out in Inkopa, the Border Patrol caught a bear crossing the road on infrared camera. So this is not the first sighting in that area, folks. Another bear sighting occurred in Kearny Mesa in April of this year when a city employee and several other witnesses reported seeing a large brown-colored bear. State Fish and Game officials speculated that that bear probably came in from East County. The bears are believed to be black bears, which are not native to San Diego County. Grizzly bears that were have been extinct since the 1920s. However, 28 black bears were relocated to the San Bernardino Mountains, just north of San Diego, back in 1933, and then 11 more were relocated to the San Gabriel Mountains. By the year 2000, the bear population in those regions was estimated to have reached between 150 and 500. It's believed that some of these bears crossed over under I-10, maybe in culverts, to reach San Diego North County. Around 2000, there were a dozen or so sightings reported in North County, Julian and Rancho Cuyamaca State Park, and Palomar Mountain, as well as the Ramona area. One even took up residence at Hyatt Park in Julian for a while. One got shot and killed east of Ramona. Wildlife officials would like to urge everyone to respect the wildlife and remember that it is possible to cohabitate with bears and other large predators. If you see one, don't panic. Black bears normally don't attack people unless you do something to frighten them or come between a mother and her cubs. Now, if any of you listeners have seen a bear in San Diego County or have photos or video, please send them to us at editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Earlier this year, Iris Neal gave us her comedian's take on the bear sightings across our region, and we thought this might be an appropriate time to play that one again.
This is Iris Neal's Funny Pages, a comedian's take on the news in East County. The Border Patrol night vision camera recently spotted a bear crossing a road in Inkapa here in East County. More bear sightings have been reported in Kearny Mesa. Fish and Game says the bear may have come in from East County. I want to know, how did these bears get into East County in the first place? And how did they get from East County to Kearny Mesa, especially during rush hour? Did they cross the border illegally? How do we know they're not terrorists in disguise? How the heck did they get through the checkpoint? Did they hitchhike or stow away in a motorhome? Did they catch a ride with the Harley Davidson gang? Some of those guys are pretty hairy. Maybe they flew in? Was TSA asleep at the body scanner? Or did they bribe them with honey? How do we know they're really black bears? They say grizzlies have been extinct here since the 20s, but maybe they've been here all along. In a bunker, in a secret undisclosed bunker, or tunnel under the border. These bears have done a good job hiding out. They're not raiding campgrounds or trash cans, so just what are they eating? Didn't we have a problem with wild boars that were running amok, potentially dangerous to hikers because they had no natural predators? Well, I guess we eliminated that problem. Anybody want to go hiking? Just wear some bells to warn those bears and carry pepper spray just in case. Know how you can tell if there's a bear droppings on the trail? It's got bells and pepper in it. So where will those bears go next? Maybe the next football game between San Diego State's Aztecs and the UCLA Bruins, or those Berkeley Bears. Like, dude, cool new mascot. Keep laughing. I'll be back with future episodes of the Funny Pages.
Willkommen! La Mesa is hosting its annual Oktoberfest this weekend in La Mesa's downtown village, complete with lively music, crafts, games, and plenty of German and American food. If you're coming to the festivities, you can visit KNSJ and East County Magazine's booth and tell us what you'd like to hear on your community radio. We'll be set up in front of All Things Bright and British at the corner of La Mesa Boulevard and 4th Street in the heart of the Oktoberfest. So stop by and say Guten Tag!
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
Job Talks on KNSJ's East County Magazine show is supported by our listeners and by the nonprofit San Diego Building Trades Family Housing Corporation, building our future.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here on Job Talks today with Mary England, the president of the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Mary, to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
Now, the chamber represents businesses in La Mesa, from the small proprietorships to the large corporations and banks. What kind of outreach does the chamber do with the city of La Mesa on economic development?
Economic development has a different meaning for everybody, but basically most people come to La Mesa want business friendly, and that means something to everyone too.
Mm-hmm. And is La Mesa a business friendly community in general?
I believe so, and I think we have some great opportunity to expand that always. We're always looking to expand it. Mm-hmm. I think the streetscape plan that's coming up, the multi-million dollar project on La Mesa in the village, is going to be a great one.
Now,
I think,
what is that going to include? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, they're going to work night and day. They're going to have new sidewalks. They're going to underground. There's just going to be a lot of improvements.
So the utilities will be below ground?
That's what they're talking about, I hope. Again, you know, the plan is different. They're going to be working at night. It's going to be a long project. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the traffic will be impacted, and there will be signs up there. All of the stakeholders in the village have been informed, gone to lots of meetings.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, La Mesa, we should add, just celebrated its centennial celebration. So it's really getting a facelift. Second 100 years.
Yes, everyone's very excited down there. And, of course, there's always growing pains with those things. So It doesn't just happen overnight.
That's true. We saw that, in Alpine when we were
exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. But I think that if we're looking at some portions of the area to be redeveloped, the vacant police site is a great opportunity for building from the ground up.
Now, what are some of the options being talked about? And if you could wave your magic wand, Mary, what would you like to see built there?
Well, I don't know what's talked about. I'd love to see some retail there. I think mm-hmm. it'd be a great, the synergy there, it's not far from the trolley. Mm-hmm. It's also not far from the village.
And that could certainly bring more jobs into Mesa.
Oh, it definitely will. Even if it was retail, people need trained salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Also, maybe a large restaurant there. Just one thing there on that parcel
that
could bring jobs.
La Mesa is really getting some nice restaurants coming in recently. I understand Cone Restaurants is getting ready to open something right in the heart of downtown.
Yes, they're looking. They're in the middle. I was there yesterday looking at the remodel, and they just announced Roger Moore mm-hmm. is going to be their young chef, a young man that has come up through the ranks, so it should be very exciting.
From Verona, I understand.
Yes. He's going to infuse some of his traits along with what the La Mesa people, their palate wants.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a great marriage.
Do you expect that'll bring some people maybe from outside La Mesa to find the village and come in and discover it here?
Well, Miriam, yes. We're very excited. The Cohens have a great reputation. To answer your question, I believe absolutely. Will people come to La Mesa to try the new restaurant? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be no reason not to. Cohen have a very high standard,
mm-hmm.
deliver a great product, and are consistent.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to be open before Oktoberfest.
Oh, that's nice timing.
Yep.
Speaking of Oktoberfest, tell us about the event which the Chamber is involved in helping to organize each year and how much that brings into the local economy, how many people.
We close down the city. Not too many cities do that.
Mm-hmm.
We reroute the buses and trolleys to accommodate over 200,000 people.
200,000. So this is really one of the biggest events in East County, along with the Mother Goose Parade, correct?
Probably in the region, and some people say it's the largest Oktoberfest this side of the Mississippi.
Well, that's quite an accomplishment.
We hire a lot of young people. I have 36 young people every year from San Diego State ROTC.
Very good.
That come and help me with traffic control. They're very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
I have 8 to 10 young people that follow me and come with us. We hire, obviously, we promote a lot of the local businesses and those that provide K-rail, fencing, all the things, electricity. We have a local electrician.
Sure,
it's
security.
Security, mm-hmm. absolutely. So we do help the economy through this weekend event.
Very good.
Not unlike the Del Mar Fair.
And the dates of it this year are
Friday, October 4th, Saturday the 5th, and the 6th. And we have a great lineup. We have 7 live bands this year on our stage.
That sounds like a lot of fun. One of them all the way from Germany.
Yes, very excited about that.
Do you see the business community growing in La Mesa? And what are some of the industries that you envision for the future?
Well, Miriam, I don't see it growing to a great degree. Believe it or not, we don't have a lot of vacant storefronts.
Mm-hmm.
However, businesses come and go, and I believe our growth will be if some larger projects come to fruition, such as Park Station.
Which is the high-rise mixed-use development that's planned over near Baltimore Drive.
Right. That's a large project. If that ever happened, there would be some improvement in our job market. Also, Walmart, the new Walmart marketplace I was thinking of, has improved our job employment.
Now, what about the future of Grossmont Center? Are there some possibilities that when the lease comes up, then they possibly change the type of use or expand?
That's a great possibility. I think the market will drive that, as well as if there's going to be building, what the cost per square foot would be to build, and is it a mixed use or is it total retail?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting to see what happens over there. Now, what are the needs of the business community to expand their operations in La Mesa? And does La Mesa have the resources that existing and new businesses need to create new jobs?
Business expansion is different to so many people. Increased sales, obviously. If a business increases sales, that pulls the trigger that they're going to need to decide to expand. Or they're going to add a new product, such as San Pasquale Winery.
Mm-hmm.
They were having their tasting. They were doing their winery in another part of the city. Now the ordinance has changed, and they're going to have their winery over on Center Street. So a lot of changes.
Which was really a very industrial area for a long time, and it's an interesting location for a winery. What else might be coming into that part of La Mesa?
Well, I'm meeting with a man that is going to start a brewery Oh. And I haven't met him yet, but it looks like we're going to have a brewery in the same area because it's zoned for that.
Interesting, because San Diego is the craft brewing capital of the nation now, according to some of the beer magazines I've
yes.
read up on that. That started in San Diego now. It's interesting to see them beginning to make their way out to East County.
It's similar to the wineries, Miriam, because you know the wineries out in East County and the region are really taking off.
Exploding.
Yeah. Yes. And the zoning out there, now that they can have tasting rooms, that ordinance was changed by the county, so now they can have the tasting rooms. They went through a 1 or 2 year process to change that ordinance.
Correct. And I just interviewed Diane Jacob, Supervisor Jacob, and she indicated they may be looking at the same thing, perhaps for craft brewing in the near future.
And I'd love that. She did look at it, and it was voted upon, I think, the last week, that they're doing that for horses.
Yes, it just passed.
So mm-hmm. I'm very excited. I think that the sky's the limit for us out here in East County.
Well, very good. The Chamber, I might add, also publishes a jobs board on its website. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where you get those from and who that benefits?
Absolutely. We encourage our business members, if they're looking not only to promote their specials and their sales, we want them to promote jobs. So they provide the information to us. We put it on the website, and our website just isn't for chamber members to look at. The public looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that this helps our business members and the economy in the long run.
Very good. What are some of the major employers in La Mesa for those out there that might be looking for jobs?
Well, obviously we have EDCO. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Helix Water District.
Right.
We have Grossmont Healthcare District.
Big. They're one of the largest employers in East County.
They are. And with all of us living longer, Miriam, we all need healthcare.
We do.
So that's good. Physical therapy is another one. Obviously, our car dealers.
Mm-hmm.
We have some great dealerships. So I think there's anyone looking for a job is welcome to search in East County. We encourage them to look in La Mesa.
Now, La Mesa is getting a facelift, I understand. Tell us a little bit about that.
We couldn't get the facelift prior to the centennial, but there has been a project called the Streetscape Downtown,
mm-hmm.
and that is going to start in January, which will help the village get a facelift.
And that includes
sidewalks, trees,
public
streetscape,
art.
The public art, the legacy project is
yes.
going to be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
That's about a $168,000 art project. It's called the Lookout. And that's going to happen before the end of next year. So there's just lots of surprises in the village.
So looking ahead 100 years, we just don't know what's in store for La Mesa, but we're certainly all looking forward to seeing what happens.
Another 100th anniversary. I wish we could be here to celebrate together.
Well, thank you very much. On that note, Mary, I'm going to thank you for being here. And tell us one more time when the Oktoberfest is coming up for those who may wish to attend. This is a free community event.
October 4th, 5th, and 6th in the village. We're going to have lots of vendors, great food, and 7 live bands on our stage.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to coming out and doing my part to support the La Mesa economy.
Thank you.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. One of the biggest events in East County, Oktoberfest, takes place this weekend in the village of La Mesa on both sides of the trolley tracks on La Mesa Boulevard. Everything from oom-pa-pa to classic rock. October 4th through October 6th will feature a variety of musical entertainment from an authentic German band and classic rock and roll. This event, which is over 35 years old, has gone from a small street fair to a 3-day festival with over 250 vendors offering goods and services to over 200,000 attendees. Enjoy great food, lots of children's activities, entertainment, and of course, good old German brats and cold beer. East County Magazine and KNSJ will have a booth right in front of All Things Bright and British on the corner of La Mesa Boulevard and 4th Street if you wish to stop by and tell us what you'd like to hear on the radio. Another Oktoberfest sponsored by the German-American Societies of El Cajon, the El Cajon Oktoberfest continues for another weekend, beginning on Friday, October 4th through Sunday, October 6th. Included in the festivities for this family-friendly event are a band from Germany in traditional dress called Guggenbach Baum, authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato salad, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, and a variety of German pastries and pretzels. Plus, there are games and activities for the whole family, with the Kids Zone and Vendors and Crafts booths. El Cajon's Oktoberfest is located at the German-American Societies of San Diego on Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. Saturday evening, October 5th, is the second annual Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation's Art in the Park. Featured art from a minimum of 45 award-winning artists will be on display and for sale, with over 100 pieces of nature-related art featuring a variety of painting styles, ceramics, photography, and sculpture. CBS 8 meteorologist and lifestyle reporter Sean Stiles and Mission Publishing Group publisher Jim Matifer return as honorary co-chairs for this event in the Visitor Center from 6 to 9 p.m. Enjoy an evening of fine art, fine wine, fine cheese, and fine chocolate. Entertainment will be provided by members of the San Diego Native American Flute Circle, followed by the Caprice Strings Trio. The San Diego Astronomy Association will have telescopes on the terrace for viewing the stars. The Mulvaney family is sponsoring the third annual Jim Mulvaney's Concert on the Green to benefit NOAA Homes Incorporated on Saturday, October 5th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Campo Road in Spring Valley near Steel Canyon High School. The concert will feature the Irish music of the Tim Foley Band. Wright's Field Nature Walks in Alpine on Saturday, October 5th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., another first Saturday nature walk will be held, with the theme, Restoring the Endangered San Diego Thorn Mint. Sponsored by Backcountry Land Trust, meet at Wright's Field on Deland Drive in Alpine. As part of Julian's Apple Days celebration, a two-day Apple Days festival will be held Saturday, October 5th and 6th at Mangini Winery, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, food and merchandise, vendors, contests, and of course, apple pie. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., both Saturday and Sunday. The History Alive lecture series, sponsored by the Lemon Grove Historical Society, continues on Thursday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. in the H. Lee House Cultural Center in Lemon Grove. Jack Shelver, the city's first city manager, will look back at the heady days of early cityhood in 1977. Jack retired to Julian in 1994, where he serves as president of the Fire Board, but he spent 17 years as Lemon Grove's chief executive. He oversaw the coming of the trolley and the recreation of the original train depot and more. The 23rd annual Mountain Bike Benefit Ride is Sunday, October 6th, beginning at 8 a.m. at Los Vaqueros Group Camp at Cuyamaca Rancho State Park on Highway 79. The event is a fundraiser for the Cuyamaca Rancho State Park Interpretive Association, which assists the state park with trail building, maintenance, and interpretive projects to benefit the public. The ride features an 18-mile course on fire roads and single tracks throughout the park. Cards will be handed out at five locations along the route. Prizes will be awarded based on the cards. Ticket price includes a hearty spaghetti lunch. Now for our preview of upcoming events, which require some planning or purchase of tickets. Wine Tasting in Warner Springs features five wineries of the North Mountain Wine Trail, and it will be held on Saturday, November 9th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at five wineries. The event includes wines paired with a full menu of gourmet foods. Live music will be performed at each site. The wineries are all within 2 miles of each other, and include La Sarissima, Orin, Shadow Mountain, Hawk Watch, and Sierra Roble. Tickets must be purchased in advance. Next is a Fair Trade Gift Fair held on October 13th in La Mesa. A wide variety of handcrafted, fairly traded items will be available from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall on El Cajon Boulevard in La Mesa. Visitors can savor samples of Fairtrade certified ice cream and coffee while perusing gift items such as handmade baskets, jewelry, clothing accessories, and an abundance of gift items. Also available for purchase will be Fairtrade chocolate, coffee, tea, bananas, and soda. The designation of fair trade signifies that artisans and farmers in the poorest areas of the world have received fair, livable wages for their product or ingredients. In addition, certain standards must be met in the production process. These include protecting the environment, building economic sustainability, and providing opportunities for education and health care for families. Young children are protected from forced labor. The 4th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate and Barbecue Festival will take place on Sunday, October 20th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Troy Street, between Bancroft Avenue and Central Avenue. Initiated by the Spring Valley Chamber of Commerce and Cali Comfort Restaurant, the goal of the festival is to raise money for youth sports programs in Spring Valley. Organizers hope to have 30 amateur barbecue teams participating in this year's competition. The teams will be competing in five categories: tri-tip, pork ribs, chicken, best decorated tailgate team, and more. The event also features games, activities, and live music, in addition to barbecue tastings. Visit www.springvalleybarbecuefestivalbbq.com for vendor booth information and more. The City of La Mesa will hold its 4th Annual Senior Expo on Thursday, October 10th, at the La Mesa Community Center on Memorial Drive in La Mesa during the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. All of these activities and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section on www.eastcountymagazine.org. Keep listening for new fall events, including Halloween activities, on Destination East County. That's all for this week. See you around, East County.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Janice Mork, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world. This is Janice Mork. I'm here with Robert Coleman, the executive director of the Second Chance Program, which deals with the hard-to-serve population, formerly incarcerated, former substance abusers, the homeless vets, and the at-risk youth. Can you tell me how you came to work with the Second Chance Program?
Sure. I came to work at Second Chance Program just 3 years ago. I spent my entire career in England working with housing young people and with counterfeit lifestyles and getting them back into work and employment. And so working at Second Chance is a real thrill for me as we work to get the hardest to serve, homeless, the veterans, people who have just come out of incarceration, people who may be using drug or alcohol or have that addiction in their lives and are moving on from that, and just helping them get back into work and full-time employment again.
Wow, very nice. And can you tell the listeners more about the Second Chance's history?
Second Chance has been around now for 20 years. This is our 20th birthday just this year, and we have a gala on the October the 5th to celebrate that event. And so in all of those years, we have been serving people through housing and job readiness training programs and helping them get back into full-time employment. And certainly since 2003, when we started collecting electronic records, we've got nearly 4,000 people back into work over those years.
Wow, what an amazing accomplishment. And how do you get word out about your programs here, and how are people referred to you?
People are referred to us in all sorts of ways. Many people come to Second Chance through referral from friends, family members. We work a lot with the sheriff and the probation departments, and so those colleagues will often refer people to Second Chance too. We have a large network of agencies that we work with throughout the county, and you know, we have an enviable reputation for getting some of the hardest to serve individuals back into employment, and working with these partnerships and these individuals along with getting word out through families and friends is a really key way for us to recruit people to Second Chance.
Okay. And your mission is to empower people to change their lives. Would you be willing to share a story of how Second Chance has accomplished this?
Sure, there are many stories to tell, but this one in particular that I'm going to share with you is the story of Angie. Angie was born a heroin addict. Her mother was a heroin addict, and when Angie came into the world, she too was suffering from that addiction as a baby. At the age of 16, Angie started injecting herself with heroin, and for the next 20 years, that was her lifestyle, in and out of prison and using drugs all the time. Angie came out of prison and was determined that her life was going to change around, was at a local residential program, and someone told her about Second Chance, and so she found her way to us. She graduated, and her first job upon graduation, just a few weeks later, was at Vons as a backpacker. But, you know, she was the best backpacker Vons had ever had, and people noticed her attention to detail and her attention to serving the customers, and an opportunity came up to become a trainee in the department. And so people said that you've not been here long enough to apply for it and you're unlikely to be successful. She put in a request and she was successful in getting the offer. And so Angie then trained to become a master butcher for Vons and graduated some months later with that qualification. Today, fast forwarding, she is the highest paid union employee at Vons at the La Jolla store. And she thoroughly enjoys using the skills that she's learned in the butchery department, serving the residents and the community there.
Okay, very cool. And can you give the listeners more details about the Strive program?
The four-week program that we provide to adults like Angie, she went through it, is 160 hours. It's Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. It's pretty tough in that we have a high expectation of what people need to achieve to pass. You know, the expectations that we set are only those that employers expect. And so we set those standards right here at Second Chance so that when people do get back out into the workplace, there's no surprises to them in terms of attitude and behavior. The 4 weeks is in two parts. The first 2 weeks is we deal solely with people's attitude and their approach to work. We deal with little things like body language, how to approach someone and shake their hand, how to smile, to look at them in the eye, and to speak with confidence. And then the last 2 weeks, we focus on some of the more detailed work refinement skills, like resume building. We do lots of mock interviews with them. How to use the internet for research prior to an interview. Maybe some of the people that we work with don't have an email address, so we'll teach them how to use email, Outlook, Word, etc. All of the IT skills that they need to do to be successful, because so often these days, you know, there is to apply for jobs, you have to apply online. And so we teach people who maybe don't have those skills how to be successful.
Very good. And what can the public do to help?
You know, there are many ways that we need the support of individuals. So much of what we do is unfunded. And so it is only through the blessings and gifts that we receive from individuals who support Second Chance through gifts and donations that we're able to provide a second chance. So that's one way. And people can make donations via our website. We are pleased to be able to always welcome employers to come to Second Chance who help with the mock interviews. It's always great for us to have HR professionals come along and actually conduct these mock interviews themselves. It creates just the best real-life situation for our graduates to learn how to cope with an interview situation when, frankly, you're sitting in front of a stranger. And then there are many other ways. One other way is we provide business clothing to our graduates. Many of them don't have any form of decent clothing that they could use for an interview situation. And so we have suits and ties and trousers and everything that is necessary to be able to fully equip an individual to be ready for that interview situation. And there are volunteer opportunities that we have with PR and marketing and fundraising. So there are many ways that people join our family and support what we do.
Very cool. I just interviewed Robert Coleman, Executive Director of the Second Chance Program. You can find out more by visiting the website www.secondchanceprogram.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ, and my newsmaker today is San Diego County Sheriff Bill Gore, our region's top cop, and he's got a big beat to cover, more than 4,200 square miles. He's been sheriff since 2009, served in law enforcement for over 40 years. He worked as a special agent at the FBI on task force handling cyber crimes and terrorism. He also worked as a chief investigator and special advisor for the district attorney's office, and as the undersheriff before he was elected sheriff. Welcome to the show, Sheriff Gore.
Thanks, Miriam. Good to be here.
Now, I understand some congratulations are in order to your department. Deputy Michael Spears was awarded the Medal of Valor by Governor Brown last week for saving two deputies during a shootout in Lakeside.
Yeah, it was a nice recognition by the state. That was obviously a really traumatic incident. Deputy Ali Perez is still off work from recovering from his injuries. And Deputy Craig Johnson, fortunately, has recovered and back to work. But we're lucky that we didn't lose a deputy on that day. And a lot of it was due to the great work of Mike Spears.
Well, we certainly all appreciate them working to keep people safe. And we certainly wish Deputy Perez all the best on his completion of his recovery. Now, today we're here to talk about crime and specifically prison realignment. California, as many of you listeners may know, has been under orders for the last 2 years from a federal court. It's gone all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they've ordered the state to ease prison overcrowding, which means cutting down the inmate population to 137% of capacity. Now, the state already has sent some prisoners back to local jurisdictions, and there's going to be another wave of that now as the last round of appeals have run out. Sheriff, can you bring us up to date
Sure. On
the latest happenings in Sacramento?
What really happened with criminal justice realignment was that as you pointed out, the Supreme Court, or the three-judge panel and upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, ordered California to lower its capacity. That equated to about downsizing over a two-year period of about 40,000 state inmates. Mm-hmm. The way the state came up in what they call criminal justice realignment, instead of releasing or just taking 40,000 inmates and transferring them to county jails, what they said was that starting October 1st of 2011, if you were sentenced in the state of California for a nonviolent, non-serious, non-serious sex offense, instead of going to state prison, you went to a county jail. Prior to that, if you were sentenced to a year or less, you went to a county jail, no matter what the offense. If you were sentenced to a year or more, any felony, you basically went to state prison. Well, that all changed. And when they looked through all their records and the type of inmate they had in state prison, they felt that over a two-year period that they had to implement realignment and to downsize their system, that would equal out to about downsizing to 40,000 inmates. Well, what's happened here, we're coming up on the two-year anniversary, December 31st of mm-hmm. this year, when it's their deadline to downsize, and they're about 9,000 to 10,000 inmates short. So they've downsized the state prison system by 30,000, 31,000 inmates. So what the state went in and asked the three-judge panel to give them a three-year extension.
But I understand that the court turned around and said, no thanks,
no,
can't
thank
do
you.
That.
They said, we're not going to give you the extension. So the next plan was, okay, if you're not going to give us an extension, what we would like to do is to get the last 1,000 inmates, not do an early release of 9,000 inmates, but contract with county jails that had space available to put mm-hmm. some of these state prisoners in county jails, and also contract with private prisons out of state to handle the remainder of the inmates.
Correct.
They felt between those two combinations, they could downsize by the end of the year by that 9,000 inmates necessary. Well, the three-judge panel came back and said, okay, we'll give you not a three-year extension. We're going to give you a one-month extension, and we're not going to allow you to contract with out-of-state private prisons, but you can contract with local county jails.
So what can they do realistically in 30 days? Is there anything?
Well, the governor is going to appeal that decision. Mm-hmm. The state sheriffs as an organization, and the district attorneys, probation officers, we all agree with the governor. I think the three-judge panel has gone outside the scope of their authority here. Their mission was to downsize the prison system. Now, how the state does that, whether they ship them to out-of-state private prisons or do it with county jails, seems to be beyond the scope of their responsibility.
Are they concerned about the conditions in some of those private prisons? Certainly, we've seen the ACLU, some others complain about inhumane conditions.
I don't know what they base their decision on, to be quite honest with you, Miriam. I disagree with it. If their decision stands, all the figures I've looked at show that we can, in the state of California, there's about 5,000 beds available in county jails.
And how many are available in San Diego County?
Absolutely none.
So we're full.
We're full. We're over full. We're at about 102 to 104% of capacity. So in reality, what we're going to end up with is about 4,000 inmates, probably, if the three-judge panel doesn't let us ship those out of state. Now they're going to have to be released early.
Now, you've had some experience with this already with the first wave of realignments. I understand you've been very proactive in how you've dealt with this. Can you tell us about some of the things you've put in place with this first wave of realignment? And also, for all the, the fear that this would increase crime, has that actually happened with the first wave of prisoners that were released early?
Two-part question. And again, I want to correct so your viewers understand, nobody's being released early. What's happening, instead of inmates serving their sentence in state prisons, when they're sentenced, they now go to county jails. We have not released any of these realigned inmates early.
Okay.
So,
are you having to release any of the lower level offenders that were in the county jail to begin with?
Our old population, some of our old misdemeanor populations, we've applied up to 10% credits to their sentences so they get out a little earlier. But when you look at the average sentenced inmate in our system served about 65 days, that equates maybe to 6 days or 10 days off their sentence.
Yeah, so it's not that
It's not that significant. And these are the old population, the least serious of the, of the violators. What we, as an organization here in San Diego, which these citizens of San Diego County should be very proud the way their public safety officials approach this. When this came down, we didn't ask for it. We fought it. But let's face it, this is reality. It's a law. Mm-hmm. And we have to implement it to keep the citizens of San Diego County safe. So what we did is we said, okay, how are we going to accomplish this? How are we going to make this work? And we looked at what do we want to accomplish. And if we're not going to have the same problems that the state had with overcrowding and a 72% recidivism rate, mm-hmm. which is what the state had.
Staggering. What is the national rate, do you know?
It's a lot lower than that, I guarantee you. So we had one of the highest in the nation.
Why is the state so high?
Well, because they just warehouse people. When you were sent to a state prison, you were sent for, anywhere from a year to 10 years, there was no programming, rehabilitation mm-hmm. programming in the facilities. They were overcrowded. Basically, every square foot that you might have had a classroom or drug treatment program in was taken up with a bunk bed.
So if you could give advice to the governor, based on what you've done here, and we want to hear more about that, what advice would you give him on how to reduce the state's recidivism rate?
Well, the answer is you've got to do more than warehousing. And they're starting to do that now that they're developing more space in their facilities. It was a double whammy. They had no space, plus we had the Great Recession of 2008. So when the light went out of the state, we got to start doing more programming in our facilities. First of all, there was no room to do it, and then we had a $28 billion budget shortfall, which realignment helped to address. It took care of the overcrowding problem, or it was meant to be, and then it also took care of the part of the $28 billion budget shortfall by putting this burden on the counties and really not giving us enough money to handle it. If we're going to be successful, we have to do programming and we have to lower that recidivism rate.
When you say programming, give our listeners some examples.
Yes, programming is rehabilitation programming. Whether it's the probably number one thing that our inmates need is substance abuse programming to get them clean and sober. Another big part of it is literacy programs, teaching them how to read or write. Anger management, all the programs that we can do for somebody to give them a chance of succeeding when they come out of our facility.
What about education and jobs?
Education programs, GED programs, getting them a high school diploma.
So they get a job when they get out instead of going back
right.
to crime.
Our biggest challenge is finding people who will hire these inmates when they come out of our jails.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just sit there and warehouse them and then recycle them over and over and over again.
Is this something where if an employer is willing to do that, should they contact your office?
Absolutely.
You know?
And I realize, we all realize, there's some professions, there's some jobs where you can't hire an ex-felon to work in there. But there are jobs that these people can do, and if trained properly, they would be very thankful mm-hmm. and hopefully good employees. And trust me, we're not naive enough to think that if we do rehabilitation programming in our facilities, we're going to turn all these people around.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
But we don't have to. If we just lower that recidivism rate from, let's say, 70% to 50%, will be a gigantic success. We will keep the crime rates down. And by the way, crime rates are down at almost a 30 to 35 year low right now.
Now, for those who might say, well, gee, I don't want to be coddling criminals, spending money on these programs. Does it work out to be less money in the long run to have these programs than to just build more prisons or jails?
I hear this all the time, Erin. I give my Rotary speeches and people say, you know, put them in jail and throw away the key. And for some offenders, the John Gardners of the world that killed Chelsea and Amber, he'll never see the light of day, and that's fine. Put him in jail and throw away the key. But what the people in our community and have to realize that 95% of the people that go away to jails and prisons are going to come back, and they're going to come right back to our community. So doesn't it just make sense to maybe give them the tools so they have a chance of succeeding when they come out of jail and have some programming set up to transition them back to the community instead of just, you know, within a year to 2 years, rearresting him, putting him back in our facilities to where we can continue to pay $40,000 to $50,000 a year to house him in there.
Certainly seems to make sense.
I mean, economically, it's crazy. And just the kind of a moral obligation we have to make some useful, good use of the time that they have in our facility.
Right.
Before we had realignment, the average sentenced inmate was 65 days. Now we think that average sentenced inmate is going to be anywhere from 1 to 3 years.
Wow, that's a lot.
Well, let's take advantage of that time. Give them some tools so they can be productive citizens if they come back to our communities, and they're all coming back. So they don't have to burglarize your house or mine or steal our car to make a living. And
speaking of the crime, since the first wave of the prison realignment, those that you've had come back and some of the local offenders that have been released a little bit early, have you seen any measurable impact on the crime rate here in San Diego County?
Crime did tick up last year, pretty much around the county, both on violent crimes and in property crimes.
Could you tie that to whether or not it was the reoffenders?
That's the whole thing. And we're speculating now. We look at, okay, well, what's changed? Well, realignment. I just think it's too early. We're watching it very closely. Mm-hmm. We don't want to put our head in the sand on this issue.
Right.
But I think it's too early to tell. And we had realignment in California, but crime went up all over the United States. And they didn't have realignment.
So it could just be a recession.
So I think personally think a lot of it's related to the recession, to the Great Recession that we're all living through, to certain benefits running out, whether they be unemployment benefits, other social programs, and people having to support their families, support themselves, or put food in their mouths, which leads to, if you can't get a job, you're going to find it somehow, and that's either through a robbery, a burglary, or a theft of some sort. But we're watching it closely. Like I say, we don't want to be naive about this, but for the first 6 months of this year, violent crime is down again.
Well, that's good news.
And property crime, except for non-residential burglaries, pretty much is down also. But it's something we constantly watch. I just think it's too early to attribute it to realignment.
The programs you've talked about, do you have some of those in effect now for some of the people that have been released? Or is that something new coming in the future?
No, absolutely. We've always done programming at a limited amount in our jails. We're expanding those. But again, you need room to do programming. We're running at 102% of capacity. We're adding space at our East Mesa Detention Facility and the new Women's Detention Facility in East County in Santee. That will give us a lot of that room to do really effective reentry programs. We're going to be building classrooms. You have to have those facilities to do this type of programming. And yes, we are expanding that. And a real key part of this is to partner with community-based organizations. So we don't do what the state did and just kick them out, give them a bus ticket, say good luck. We want to transition them into, if they need it, a sober living bed in the community, a substance abuse program where they can continue in their sobriety. And again, that key part is maybe trying to find them a job. So when they leave our facilities, they go into some type of employment so they can support themselves or their family.
Very good. As we're taping this on Monday morning here, Congress is trying to decide whether or not to shut down the federal government or not. If that occurs, is that going to have an impact on local law enforcement or public safety, do you think?
I don't see if it's a short-term close, shutdown, a week, something like, I don't see any real impact on us.
That's good.
It will have sequester's already had an impact on us, really, from a public safety standpoint, because our partners in the federal level, and we partner like no other region of the country does with FBI, DEA, Customs and Border Protection, Border Patrol. Well, those people are all taking a furlough days. And so to the extent they're not there and have the amount of participation that we're used to, you know, that hurts us. A lot of the FBI employees will be exempted because they are considered essential personnel. But there are the professional staff that back them up that people forget about.
So there might be a backlog in the paperwork.
Right, sure. So everything kind of slows down. They might not carry a gun and a badge, but they're the backbone of any operation. They like they're at the sheriff's department. They support the gun carriers who are out there putting people in jail, and it just puts a monkey wrench in the whole criminal justice system. So if there is a shutdown, I certainly hope that the politicians come to their senses and it's a short shutdown.
There you go. Now, your office has gained fame for doing a lot with technology to help solve crimes and really do more with less in these tight budget times. Can you give us a few examples, and do you see some ways that technology might help you with monitoring some of these prisoners, for example,
sure, sure,
or helping to cut down on crime?
Just to address your last thing there, we need, if we're going to make this thing work, to free up jail beds, because we were short to start off with.
Sure.
Jail beds for people that really need to be behind bars. So we, one of the first things we did was set up an alternative custody program for our old inmates, our old misdemeanors.
And what are some of the kinds of inmates, misdemeanors we're talking about?
Oh, here? You know, a lot of your drug crimes are misdemeanors. Some
petty thefts,
small larcenies, white collar crimes, some are misdemeanors. So what we've done is come up with a program to identify the people that pose the least amount of risk to the community from a public safety standpoint. And we put them in an alternative custody program with an ankle bracelet. Maybe they're in their home, or they're in a work furlough program to where they come and spend their nights in a work furlough bed, but then they go out and work. So they keep that job. So we freed up about 300 beds through our alternative custody program. On the law enforcement side, which is critical, our number one focus is intelligence-led or information-led policing. And all that sounds really fancy. What it means is taking advantage of the information age we live in, taking all that information that's out there now, thank God, in a digital format, taking information we gather in our automated records management system, so crime stats are instantaneously available to us now, buying a criminal justice software so we can take all that information and get it to our people out in the field in a usable format to our patrol deputies so that they can hopefully be predictive instead of reactive. When there's a murder or there's a crime committed, we're great, and local law enforcement and cops and sheriffs are really good at responding and investigating that crime. What we want to do is try to be there ahead of that and be predictive and stop those crimes.
Makes sense.
A great example are residential burglaries. In the past, if you have a residential burglar, a prolific burglar, you're going to unfortunately probably catch him on the 18th, the 25th burglary.
In La Mesa, when my house was burglarized, they didn't even take fingerprints back then. Even though the guy dropped the knife in the bedroom on the way out the window, they wouldn't even take fingerprints.
What we're trying to do now, using all this information technology, looking at patterns and scientific advances, DNA primarily, to try to catch that residential burglar on the second burglary instead of the 20th and keep crime rates down. DNA has been a great, great help in that area. Everybody thinks of DNA solving the murder and the rape and the blood and the semen and all that. The biggest beneficiary of advanced DNA technology and our ability in our lab to get DNA from smaller and smaller specimens is in the area of property crimes.
Very interesting.
Burglaries, car thefts. We get what they call contact DNA.
Interesting.
You get DNA out of a fingerprint.
You know, you set up the high-tech forensic crime lab here in San Diego.
And then we had Prop 69 back in 2004, which took a state database of identified DNA from 250,000 to up over 3 million specimens now. So as that database grew, so we know who that DNA belongs to, and our ability to extract DNA from smaller and smaller specimens, we're solving crimes that we've never solved before. 400 or 500 crimes that we're solving every year that never would have been solved through DNA. So that's how we're catching that burglar on the second burglary instead of the 25th burglary.
Now, as we approach the 10-year anniversary of the Cedar Fire, one issue that's very much on the minds of East County residents and really people all over San Diego County is, are we safer than before or not? What is happening with the inmate fire camps, and what impact is the state realignment having on that? Are we safer or less safe?
The first part, we are safer. Law enforcement and public safety is better prepared than we've ever been. Our communications are better. We've done, I think, a good job in a lot of areas of brush removal. Probably could always do more, but that's kind of resource-driven.
Improving alerts, certainly.
Realignment has had an undesired effect on some of the state fire camps. the type of inmate that staffs these state fire camps are now in county jails. The nonviolent, non-serious, non-sex offenders.
So they can't send them out to the fire camps
anymore?
Well,
now they're in our county jails, and the state says, well, you know, we need some of those inmates to staff our fire camps. We said, you know, we'd be willing to work with them and mm-hmm. give them to the state. But now the state says, but if you're going to give them to us, you have to pay us because that's
wow.
your inmate.
Wow.
So it's a real catch-22. They created the problem. They gave us the inmate that they normally would have had in their fire camp. And if we want to give them to the fire camp, protect our backcountry, we have to pay the state
so
to take their prisoners they used to have.
Is the county able or willing to make those payments? Or what's going to happen?
Yeah, in spite of the catch-22 part of it and how bad it irritates me, mm-hmm. our bottom line is we got to keep this county safe.
Mm-hmm.
We've entered into a contract with State Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. We've come up with the money, and we will pay the state to take some of these inmates so these fire camps can be staffed. The maximum I think we'll be able to squeeze out of our San Diego County population is about 100 inmates.
So does that mean we're going to have a lower population total at these fire camps then?
I'd have to look and see what the state numbers are, but I think that's what I've heard from the state is they're really having a difficult time staffing a lot of these camps.
It's so very troubling.
Yeah, it's very troubling. But we're working with them. We've got an MOU with the state. We're going to be taking our inmates, putting them in the fire camps under the supervision of CDCR.
Is it time maybe to reopen some county fire camps with some of the local low-level offenders?
We run into a lot of those same problems. What we're looking at is maybe entering into agreements with Public Works so that they're out there doing a lot of brush removal. Anytime we can keep our inmates busy doing something instead of just sitting in a cell, everybody wins.
Yeah, I've actually talked to inmates who've been through these honor camps, they called them way back when, and they actually said they liked it better than sitting in a cell. And they
sure. But the inmates, our inmate population is changing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a higher risk offender than we did in the past.
So these may not be the kind of people you want to just be out in an area where they could run off.
Yeah, you don't want these people, a lot of them out in the backcountry, unsupervised or with minimal supervision. So it's a constant balancing act that we're trying to do between keeping our backcountry safe and the fire dangers we live through here on a regular basis and the risk these people pose to public safety when they're out in the community. So we're working with the state. Probably there's only a couple of counties now in the state out of 58 that have entered into a contract. We're one of them. Diane Jacob, Supervisor Jacob, has been a good partner in working with us to make this happen.
Well, it's good to hear that you're being proactive about that. And Sheriff, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show today. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know or anything that listeners out there can do to help your office keep everyone safe?
Well, there's so many things. You know, we talk about it. We just talked about fires. There's, you know, clearing the area around your home to keep your particular home safe and have that setback from the shrubbery and the brush that's out there. This is all of our responsibility. Beyond the fire danger, what you can do to help us, volunteer, be involved. Get involved in neighborhood watches. Criminals like nothing more than a neighborhood full of strangers to where nobody knows anybody else. It's better when you have that sense of community and you watch out for each other, either through community watch programs. There's different things you can go online now and sign up for with different departments to be a part. You can volunteer with the sheriff's department or most local law enforcement agencies. We have 700 senior volunteers
That's
in the
great.
Sheriff's department. Our search and rescue team is all staffed with volunteers.
And they're amazing.
150 people. There's a lot of ways that you can get involved and make San Diego County a safer place to live. My goal, and I said this when I ran back in 2009, was to make San Diego County the safest urban county in the United States. And we're not far from meeting that goal. And it's not just me. It's not the cops. It's this sense of community that we all have in the community and the citizens working with law enforcement and making this really a team effort.
Well, very good. We certainly appreciate you coming on the show today. And thank you very much, Sheriff Gore, for joining us here.
We could have made this a four-hour show, I think.
I think we could have. And we certainly look forward to having you back in the future. Anytime there's something that you want to talk about or want our listeners to know, you're welcome back anytime.
Good. Thanks, Miriam.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel,
royalty-free music, Frank Nora, Kevin MacLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.